Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Stay at Home Actor Podcast. Today's guest is Bethany Ann Lind, who I have been following along with for a while now. She's an incredible Atlanta actor, an incredible human. She's been in so many things. A lot of you will know her from Ozark, Doom Patrol, Reprisal, Lee Tiller in Blood on Her Name, Sandra in Stranger Things. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. Just check out her IMDb because it is full of roles and full of credits. She's also the creator and author of the One Job Away newsletter and blog that talks all about the ups and downs of being a working actor. That has been one of my favorite things that I have been following along with just for myself. She's a beautiful writer, and I kind of fangirl over her a little bit in the conversation, but I have no regrets because she's just so talented as a writer, as an actor, and so kind. She has used her position in the industry to stand up against injustice, and we talk about that. We talk about everything from how she landed her first agent to what it was like working with Laura Linney and Jason Bateman in Ozark, all the way to the time that she called out HGTV online after being fired from a commercial shoot for literally requesting the time and space to pump when she was a breastfeeding mother, which is bonkers. But yeah, she's so cool, so down to earth, and just someone you will absolutely want to know. So without further ado, here is Bethany Ann Lind. I would love to start from the very beginning, and know, did you grow up in Atlanta? Are you an Atlanta native?
No, but I'm from North Carolina. I'm a Southern girl, too.
Okay. What part of North Carolina?
High Point.
And then did you go to college in North Carolina?
I did. Well? I went to Campbell University, which is like between Raleigh and Fayetteville in Buies Creek, which is known for its single stoplight that was taken away because it was just causing too many problems. Small liberal arts school.
And you were a theater major?
Yeah, okay. I was. I wasn't totally sure, like, if I would be an actor or what, because I certainly didn't know any just, like, working class actors. I mean, I didn't know any movie stars either, but I didn't know what that kind of life would even look like. But I knew I loved acting and was going to have it in my life in some way and didn't really know what else to do. So,
yeah.
Theater, why not?
When did you start doing theater before college? Like, did you do it as a child and then the rest of your teenage years, or did you start like in high school?
So I was homeschooled, and I would do like the church musicals and stuff. The very first one I did, I was 5 years old, and I did it with my dad, and it was like this, it was like a game show musical called The Bible Tells Me So Show. And it was very silly, and my dad wore like the Groucho Marx glasses and mustache, and I was like the Vanna White character, like flipping the cards around. And I was five, but I like used this voice. I remember one of the lines was 50-50, Richard. And I just had like a whole character. And my dad is not a professional actor, but is, he's a ham in front of an audience. Uh-huh. And we just had the best time. And I remember people were laughing, and I was like, this is the best feeling ever.
That was when you were five?
That was when I was five. And it wasn't like, I'm going to be an actor, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. It was just, I just knew that, you know, that I loved it, that it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And then I did like, I mean, mostly I did like community theater through high school and little things here and there. And again, just wasn't totally sure what I wanted to do. So I stuck with it in college.
I love that. And do you, I know that you're not the kind of parent that is forcing your kids to do anything like this, but do you see in them, any of them, that they might want to be actors one day?
They have little things here and there, and we've actually very much avoided it with them. I mean, they did a theater camp at the Alliance a couple years ago because I was doing a play there, so they got to go to camp while I was in rehearsal, and they, you know, they had a great time. But yeah, every now and then, my daughter did a film when she was two, which I, was sort of the latest I wanted them doing anything. I was happy for them to do stuff when they were babies, and like when they would not remember it and like put money away. But yeah. At this point, every now and then someone will reach out because they know I have kids and I'll ask them about it. My daughter did an audition recently and she didn't get it. And she hasn't done many auditions, but she was crushed. And, you know, I had to go through the whole rejection thing with her. And so I was like, if you had fun with that, if you like it, we can take some classes and try some things, but you have to know that this is part of it. You remember how much mommy auditions and how few jobs I actually get, you know. And she did not quite compute that was, you know, that's part of the whole thing. But she was the most disappointed that she wouldn't get to go to Crafty all day. So I will say that was the most disappointing part for her, which I get.
That is, I always think, I'm like, how do you explain that or understand that as a child?
Yeah.
You really can't.
Yeah.
It's hard because I even think about just school plays that I would audition for.
Right.
And that felt like the hugest thing in the whole world. I had like a sick stomach about it, like leading up to the audition. So I think about, I did a commercial not too long ago and I had a little like kid who was my little son in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so interesting listening to him talk about an audition that he thought was the movie. Isn't that sweet? I think he thought he was in a Marvel movie. So he was like, I just filmed in Marvel. I was like, wow. So then I was talking to his mom. I was like, he was just in Marvel. She was like, he had an audition, which is amazing.
Sure.
And it was like an in-person audition. So he was telling me, he was like, the director was doing all kinds of things with me. And he was directing me, but it was really the casting director. It was an in-person audition giving him notes. So it was just interesting to me because I'm like, oh, that would – they don't know, you know, if you're five.
Yeah.
How old are your kids?
They're 7 and 9.
And what are their names, if you don't mind me asking?
Waylon is 9 and Rozzy is 7.
Okay. Waylon and Rozzy.
Mm-hmm.
I love those names. One of my best friends wants to name her daughter Waylon one day.
Oh,
that's cute. That's been on her baby name list for a long time.
Oh.
I don't know if you've read Jenna Fisher's book.
No, I haven't yet. I've been meaning to.
You would love it. It's so good. And when I read your newsletter, I really do love your newsletter. Your humility when you, I just appreciate it because I see you as someone who's so successful that I'm like, oh, you haven't had any bad days. Like, or of course you have had bad days and of course you've had rejection. But I think that all people who are earlier on in their career see to veteran actors are their long resumes, and you have a huge resume. And so when I see someone like Jenna Fisher, I don't think of all the series regulars she almost got and didn't, or all the time she screen tested and didn't get it. And her book is just full of stories like that. And it's so inspiring, but she talks about, she went to a mid-sized school, for her theater degree and loved it. And it's not like a fancy school that anybody would know about, but
you don't always need that, you know?
Yeah. I think it depends on, it's person by person. I think, like, maybe I would have been talented enough to get into a BFA if I had had, like, that ambition. But I don't know that I either wanted it enough at the time or had the confidence to be competitive at that point and that age. And, like, why should you have to be, too? Like, why should you have to be so competitive already? Maybe, I guess, it for certain people that prepares you for your career, and for other people it's better to just be able to do the thing and find out if you love it enough to keep doing it.
Right. Well, also I think if you start out so serious so early on, it almost loses the fun and magic of why you wanted to do it in the first place. So you graduated, did you stay in North Carolina for like a couple years, get married, and then when did y'all move to Atlanta?
We moved to Atlanta right after we got married, but in the year after college, I worked at a couple of small theaters in North Carolina. I worked at North Carolina Shakespeare, which is no longer with us, like so many good theaters in the last 10 years have not been able to, you know, make ends meet. I did like an educational theater tour. I waited tables, you know, I did all the things. And then we moved here. And yeah, and I started working in theater in Atlanta pretty quickly within the first year.
Was Our Town your first production that you did in the Atlanta theater scene?
No. No, I'd done a few years of things before that, actually. But that was one of my favorites.
I guess maybe I was wondering that because that's when you were with your first agent that mm-hmm. that whole situation happened. Okay.
Yeah.
And did you, I'm asking this too because I think I get discouraged personally because I sometimes get down on myself because I feel like I'm starting too late, you know? And so I've been with my current agency the past couple of years, 2022 until now.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were strikes and all those things.
Pregnancy. Yes.
COVID.
Yes. Yeah.
The aftermath of COVID.
Crazy years. Yeah.
And so I almost feel like my time is gone. Like, and anyways, I ask that because I think I felt a little encouraged because I think I probably just assumed you were someone that had an agent either right after graduating college or during college, but that wasn't the case for you, right?
No, I, so when I moved to Atlanta in like it was 2005. There was no film scene here yet. I mean, there was a thing here and there. There were, you know, there was some stuff happening in Wilmington, but I did not anticipate having a film career here. I thought I was going to get a little theater resume going and then move to New York. I still also at that point thought I could make a living doing theater. But yeah, I got an agent in Atlanta, you know, within the next couple years, but that was just, I can shoot a commercial or an industrial here and there and maybe not have to like work so many day jobs. And then the tax incentives were passed and the filming started happening here in like, you know, at the end of the aughts, I guess. And so that's another thing I say to people when they ask me about like getting an agent and stuff. It's so much harder than when I was getting my agent. You know, there just weren't that many actors here. So when I was doing theater, I was doing it about as full time as you could do it and still not not making a decent living. And that's when the TV shows started filming here and a few movies here and there started picking up because the tax incentives had been passed. But it was, you know, when I did my first, Mean Girls 2 was my first big movie role, and I was 28 when I filmed that. Yeah.
Thank you for saying the age. I never would have wanted to ask, obviously, because people don't like to, which I totally understand.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, it gets used against you sometimes. But I think it is helpful for people to hear at the same time who are earlier on, like, oh, well, I'm 28, or, you know.
Yeah. No, and I think the thing about when people feel like, oh, it's too late, I mean, I get that, and there are parts of me that look back and think, you know, I should have been doing more. I wish I'd had more opportunities in my 20s. At the same time, I had a lot of opportunities to grow and learn, and the industry is extremely sexist. There's like no way around that. It is, it does not write great roles for women over 40. So that's what I'm starting to deal with, figuring out. But it's getting better, and there will always be a need for people at every age and stage of life. So if you love it and you're willing to put up with all the crap that you have to put up with, I don't think it's too late for anybody.
I love that. When you you say that you were 28 when you did Mean Girls 2, was that was also the year that you booked your first co-star, right?
Yeah, it was kind of right back to back. Because it was the same director, Melanie Mayron. She directed me in Drop Dead Diva. And, yes, I wrote about it in my blog newsletter that I missed a performance of Our Town to shoot this co-star role. Because I didn't really know what I was doing. But also the people around me who did know better didn't really do their jobs either.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she felt bad about the situation, but she also liked me, you know, she saw something in me. And so she made sure that I got to read for Mean Girls 2 when she came back with that the following summer. It was probably a few months later that auditions were for that. And she had me reading for like one of the Plastics. At the time I read for the same one like three or four times, you know, in front of producers, and I could tell that she wanted me in one of those roles so bad, and they were just not into me. And so the very last read I had, they were like, okay, can you just read this, the school reporter role too? Just go out, look it over, and come back and do that one. And so I did. And that's the role I got, which was still a nice big role. And obviously, like, the movie itself is not anywhere near as iconic as the original. yeah, it was great. It was fun, and Melanie was just a lot of fun to work with, and helped me a lot. Like, she understands theater, and she knew how to like talk to me and help me do what I needed to do for the camera.
That's sweet that you knew she was fighting for you. And also when I was reading that story, like, my anxiety was at an all time high. I am such a people pleaser that I was dreading this for you, and it wasn't your fault. Like, you just didn't know. And a lot of people seem to have dropped the ball on their end. And you were very kind to not throw anyone else under the bus, which is very admirable, but I could not. I almost like didn't want to keep reading it, but I did.
I know.
because that is some that I would be. I would get myself into a situation like that. I just.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a. That's a thing to that people pleasing. It's a rough one.
It really is. I very much struggle with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I had another question. You talk about, so you went from Chase Paris, who's now casting, but he was your mm-hmm. first agent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then did it go Howen, then Stewart, then People Store?
Uh-huh.
Is that the order? Okay.
Yeah.
So I think this would be really helpful to anyone.
Yeah.
How did you know whenever it was time for you to switch agents?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was with Houghton, and Misty's still there, and I still love Misty. I actually saw her a couple months ago. We were at a birthday party, and we sat at a table together and just had the best time. And she knows these little smart things about the business that, yeah, I just have a lot of respect for her. So there wasn't any, like, bad blood there. It was
right.
I was doing a lot of theater. That was in Kenny Leon had cast me in a couple of things, and I was going to New York to audition for things, and I really wanted some connections there. I had done some of the TV. I'd done Mean Girls 2, and I liked it, but I was like, it doesn't fulfill me the way that theater does. So Stewart had just hired this agent who had been in New York with Stewart Talent up there. And I had a friend who I had done a play with in DC who was like, you should talk to this guy. So I did, and I really liked him, and he was going to connect me with the Stewart office in New York. And so I just decided that it was time to move on from Houghton. Chase had been, he actually wasn't there the whole time I was there, but he had been there for the past several years and had done some things fighting for me, but also, truthfully, I often felt like anytime I was doing a play, it was sort of annoying to him, and like he never came to see anything I did. So if I had only learned that that's what an agent-client relationship would be like from him, I think that's a very unhealthy relationship. I didn't feel supported, which I didn't know at the time. It's not okay.
Okay.
But I left Houghton, and they were, I met in person with Misty and Chase and told them, and they were very kind and supportive, honestly. And Misty had told me, you know, that the door is always open to come back. And she understood at the time, you know, why that was important to me. And Chase also left, I think, 2 or 3 weeks later to start Feldstein Paris with Tara. But then I moved to Stewart, and the guy who was the agent there was, he was great. And he immediately came and saw my plays and was getting me stuff or getting me auditions, set me up with Stewart, who's in New York. And I signed with them also, which was lovely. And then he left abruptly from Stewart. It feels like it was only a few months after I had moved over, and I
oh,
had,
no.
Yeah. And I think it was just some personal things. And he, I mean, cut ties, got out of the business. No, like, no contact ever again. The New York agents, like, told me that he was gone.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. And it's a rough
So you were without an Atlanta you were just without an Atlanta agent after that?
I think they got Christian pretty quickly because she had been an agent before somewhere else. I can't remember where, and, you know, was looking to get back in. And this is also when we were still taping a lot of auditions at our agencies. I don't know if you ever did that, but back in the day, like, because we, so much of what we were getting was from LA, we were having to self-tape. But the agents would just tape for us basically a lot of the time, which was kind of nice. Like more FaceTime, you get to know them, but also, you know, you're on that time crunch, which can be good. You go in prepared and ready to go and do the thing. But if you're a person who's like, I need to do it a few more times. Time didn't work out so well. So, but anyway, she came to Stewart and she was so sweet and great. But for me at that point, I had moved specifically for that agent, you know, and this was just a different feeling and, nothing personal against her. It just didn't. It felt like she needed time to, you know, catch up to the business and what was going on, and through no fault of her own. I mean, it was a one woman show basically. So, mm-hmm. And I was at a point in my career where I was like, no, but I moved here to keep, you know, moving forward. So, and at that point, so I had actually been with Houghton and People Store briefly at the very beginning of my career, cause I didn't, know what I was doing. And I signed with People Store. I signed with Houghton, I think, for commercials and People Store for film.
Oh, okay.
Because you could do that then.
Okay.
I don't think anybody would. I don't think anybody here would do that. In LA and New York, that's a thing, but mm-hmm. nobody here is going to do that. But yeah, so I had been with both of them at the very beginning and felt more connected with Houghton at the time. And so just decided, a friend had said, you should just be with one so that you can focus on your relationship with one agent. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's smart. So I moved over to Houghton at the very beginning. But anyway.
Was Stewart a new, because they were already had the New York office, were they pretty freshly new in Atlanta and the roster was small? And did you have any nerves about that, going on to a roster that was going to be a lot newer, smaller versus Houghton's?
The reason I thought it was going to be a good move for me at the time was because of the New York connections. Like, I wanted to be auditioning for New York theater, regional theater. And that was so much more of my focus than even film and TV in Atlanta. So, it was less of a concern for me then. I also, you know, come, like I said, the small school, I loved that. So I don't mind being, you know, big fish, small pond or whatever. I don't mind like being on a smaller roster. And I having the more focused attention was working for me. And I really liked the few months that I had there were, you know, working out how I anticipated. But then he left, mm-hmm. which I also don't blame anybody for getting out of this business if you need to. So anyway, at that point, I thought, you know what, I should give People Store a try again and see where they're at. And, they were happy to meet with me. And, it just felt like I needed to get over to somebody who knew me. I would also still be new to them and be exciting to them, which that's part of it too. But now I've been with them for over 10 years.
That's awesome. That's
Yeah.
great. You wrote something in One Job Away that I wanted to read, if you don't mind. I thought it was
Okay.
beautiful. And it perfectly describes how I felt and still feel. And I'm sure how a lot of other actresses feel. This is from the one called The First Time I Fought Back. You wrote, "Choosing the right time to have a child while on any career path seems fraught with obstacles. Choosing the right time to have a child when your body is the instrument in which to carry that child and also the instrument by which you receive work is an absolute fool's errand." So in my early 30s, with a theater career in full swing and a growing film career, I stopped trying to figure out the right time and just did it. Y'all, I could not get a job when I was pregnant. I insisted that I wanted to work. There wasn't any reason I couldn't be someone's secretary or lawyer or waitress or mayor. The breakdown doesn't need to mention that the character is pregnant. Pregnant people exist in society everywhere. Just let me audition. I feel this in my bones. There were so many times where I would talk to Alec about this, and I would be like, I really don't understand why you can't have a pregnant receptionist. You know? Do you feel like that's slowly changing or not so much? Or is it hard to say?
I don't know. I haven't been pregnant in about 8 years, so I haven't had to deal with it. I don't turn my TV on and see somebody pregnant with no explanation.
I know,
Or,
it's what I think about too.
yeah, and I just started doing like an advice, or I'm going to start doing an advice section of my newsletter. Maybe not a section, it might be like a monthly or or every other month thing. But I've gotten a few questions, but one of them was that she is pregnant, she's newly pregnant, and her agent is putting her booking her out for a year. And I just couldn't believe it. That wasn't her choice. But, and I'll go into it more when I answer. But like that's nuts to me. I don't know if it's like an added liability as far as insurance for your production goes. I should look into that. If it's people are just uncomfortable with making sure that you're okay and have what you need. I don't know. I mean, I get to a degree why, yeah, they're not gonna cast you in a series regular role when they know your body is changing and it'll change at a different pace than the thing is being shot at. I get all of that. But yes, when you are auditioning for co-star roles, I mean, almost every role that I had played up until or every co-star role I played before I was pregnant could have been pregnant at any stage. Like it doesn't matter.
My friend booked a commercial not too long ago, like last year, and the wardrobe asked her agent for her sizes. And so they mentioned something about maternity, and they then went a different direction after when they had already booked her. And I just thought that was so wrong. And the commercial, first of all, she really wasn't showing much. She was just starting to wear a little bit of maternity jeans or whatever pants. But even if she were showing a lot, it wouldn't, to me, matter
Yeah.
based on what she was doing in the commercial.
That makes my blood boil.
I know. It's
Did
so
she get paid?
wrong. Actually, no. Well, I don't think she got paid because I think they almost worded it like she didn't, well, officially book it, but wardrobe was asking for her sizes, so you know.
That's what happened to me with the breastfeeding thing, where it was
Yeah,
like,
could you go more into that for people who haven't read that?
Yeah, it was a few weeks after my second child was born, and I was just ready to get back to work. I didn't want to be working full time, but I was ready to, go do a day of work here and there, which is what we what we do. And I was breastfeeding, and but I booked this job. I mean, it was like, I don't even know if it was a commercial or an industrial. It was for HGTV. It was a commercial, but it was like a commercial for a show that they're doing. And they, I had been booked, I made sure not to mention it until I was booked. And then I said to my agent to please tell them that I would need about a 20-minute break about every 3 hours to pump. And they decided that they were going to go in a different direction. Same thing. And I just could not believe it. We have laws about it. So I just went on Twitter and tagged Scripps Network, HGTV. I went on Facebook, did the same thing. People were outraged. It got shared on, you know, like on breastfeeding groups and moms groups. And I think I knew somebody who worked for them also, who like made higher ups aware of what had happened. And I got a call from the VP of, or maybe one of the VPs, I don't know how many there are, but of Scripps, of HGTV, and she also sort of tried to skirt around, like maybe they didn't really think you were hired, or they didn't think you were officially booked yet, and I was like, no, ma'am. I mean, I was booked, and I was unbooked when I told them I needed breaks to pump milk. And also still a bit of a people pleaser and still very much trying to be accommodating and apologizing, you know, for what I need, but still, you know, making sure that I would have what I needed. And I was very early on, and I knew this was probably all going to a bunch of men who would be filming this. And so just to know that, like, it is serious enough that if I don't have the break, I can get sick, or I can, you know, have problems with breastfeeding. So anyway, they paid me for the day, and they sent me a really nice bouquet of flowers. But I fully believe, and I think that's on the agent, that if someone is booked and they get unbooked or fired, or whatever you want to call it, fired for being pregnant or breastfeeding, that agent should be fighting for them to get their day of pay. You know, that's insane.
Yeah, I don't want to say for sure, but I'm 99.9% sure she did not get paid.
Yeah.
Because again, they didn't officially book her, but they were asking for her wardrobe. And so I think her agent was disappointed in them, not her, of course, obviously, but
yeah,
I think his response was just like, oh, we'll get them next time. But I think the only reason they paid you is because they didn't want to, like you said, like be sued, or, mm-hmm. you know, like it was, which $1,000 for that to meet and a bouquet of flowers is still, you want to work. Like,
yeah. It's also the problem with agents, and especially with like that kind of a thing, is they have relationships with the casting directors and with the, you know, the other side clients. And they don't want to piss anybody off for the future, but we are their clients. We are the bosses of our agents, and we work together. And but like my agents all called me privately and were like, I'm glad you're doing this fight, but we can't say anything publicly because of our relationships. And I'm like, well, probably should have said something to them on the when they fired me.
Yeah. And then you went 5 to 6 years without auditioning for that office again, right? Uh-huh. For the HGTV commercial, for the casting office?
Yeah. Which, again, like, that wasn't, you know, there weren't, they didn't cast a lot of things that I was super excited about, so I was okay for that, you know, but but that she never reached out to me either, the casting director.
I love that you stand up for people, standing up for moms and standing up for the Atlanta talent pool that there is in Atlanta. And I know in, was it 2022, you kind of spoke out about Atlanta actors being paid unfairly compared to LA actors who have the same similar credits, if not more. Deadline wrote an article about you in 2022, I think, about how you kind of spoke out about that on Twitter. I love that you did that because, again, the people pleaser in me would be afraid to. It just is a sucky situation, I think, all around, because actors don't typically have the power, you know? Do you have any regrets for doing that? Because I imagine that casting office, you don't probably see them a lot anymore since you kind of, not intentionally, you weren't really calling them out. It was more the production, right?
Yeah, I mean, the deal is I had stopped auditioning for Marvel through Feldstein Paris because every email I received said scale only will not negotiate with local actors. And I think that's insane, like, for Marvel to come to Georgia and, you know, say that they'll only pay us the bare minimum that our union requires them to pay us. And I tweeted something along those lines. And it got, you know, it got a lot of, mostly just like a bunch of other Atlanta actors chiming in, making jokes about it, honestly, because that's all we can do. Like, yeah, we should start a 2 for the price of 1 Georgia actor special or something. Just stuff like that. Because it's ridiculous. But, yeah, Feldstein Paris casts everything for Marvel. And Chase started liking all of the tweets and responses. And that was a passive-aggressive move on his end, which I know that because I know him. I've known him for a long time, like I said. He likes to act like he's... you know, was out of it, has clean hands of it, but he's not. Because he does the same, they have the same practices in that office. But then Tara eventually responded late into the evening. I was driving to Tennessee at the time to film an indie, and my phone started blowing up. Like, she responded, and, you know, and her response was $1,000 a day plus free food to mostly sit around all day seems like a pretty good deal to me, which is, you know, one of the most ignorant, degrading things I've ever heard said about actors by someone who supposedly knows what we do and, you know, they don't work for us, but they allegedly fight for our local talent base.
Champion that talent.
And I had a couple more hours in the car to lower my blood pressure. And I'll be honest, when that happened, I had just had a pretty terrible negotiating experience with them. I mean, and if you look at my resume up to that point, they were involved in, you know, like a third to half of it. They cast me a ton of times. I'm not, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunities that they sent my way, but, and they'll deny it till the day they die, but they get a lot of work because they promise us at bargain basement prices. They say they don't, but we've literally heard them. So many people have heard them say it. So anyway, I finally responded a couple hours in, and several other people also bravely responded. And it just spiraled downward. She would not back down. Then she started deleting everything, and I talked to her a few days later on the phone. She had made an attempt at an apology online, and it was, sorry if you felt, you know, kind of an apology, which didn't take responsibility for her words or what they mean to us. And so I responded again. She called me and we talked for about half an hour. And the promise was that that she wanted to learn and, you know, continue the conversation of just how to be respectful of each other. And I haven't heard from them since. I have not had an audition. My agents have to go around them to LA casting now if there's something here that I'm right for. And I have an LA agent and manager. So at the time when it happened, yeah, I was happy to do it because I felt like I was so burned by the last negotiation I had had with them that I did not want to have to do it again. And I felt like I had the privilege of having other avenues to, I'm sure that I've lost work. I'm sure that there are things that because they know me, they know what I'm good at. They're not like, they're not idiots. They've cast me in lots of things that were perfect for me. And then for 2 years, you know, to not have anything, I'm absolutely sure there's work I've lost out on. But I'd do it again in a heartbeat and we'll continue.
You are such a badass. You really are.
Well, it's when you're like, when you know, like you can't take that anymore. And there are so many people who won't. And I wasn't at all the only one. I just already was loud on social media. And so I was the one who made the initial tweet, but there were plenty of people who also stood up. And I've heard since then that, that they're nicer to agents now. I've heard that. So that's great. I hope that's true. I've heard that, that there's been more negotiating and less like, no, scale. That's it. Scale. I've heard that's true. And they weren't at all the only ones who are guilty of that. I mean, productions come to Georgia to save money. I get that. So, it's not just like one office's fault. I never have said that and wouldn't say it now. But you know, we have to be able to make little steps and we have to see ourselves as like all fighting for the same thing. We're all working to, we have just an incredible talent base in Georgia and there's no reason we shouldn't be able to get a raise here and there.
One of my friends, and I don't want to keep you for too long because you've been very generous with your time. Okay. One of my friends is a huge Ozark fan, though. Aww. Would you mind just sharing what it was like booking the job and how it was on set? Any favorite stories that you might have to share? Just for, his name is Jeff. You can he loves Ozark. He was like, I literally can't wait.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks. Oh, it was so fun. I actually auditioned for Ozark like 2 weeks after I had my second baby. And I remember it because it was my birthday, because my birthday is 2 weeks after hers. And I auditioned 2 weeks after. My husband had been in the pilot and I was like super pregnant. And I was like, so cool. You're going to go hang out with Jason Bateman and I'm going to be here really pregnant. And he had a great time. And then I booked it. We didn't know how much it was going to be. I just got, one episode at a time. I will say this, my husband, got a guest star credit and I was in 5 episodes and was only given a co-star credit and we fought for that and we don't know why they wouldn't come around on that. Don't know if that was sexist or they said that they ran out. I don't know if that's a thing, but anyway. but of course I wanted to do it and I had to do it and I had a great time. I think I started filming think she was about 6 weeks old when I started filming, and I wear a pregnant belly throughout, which was, it was great because you can sort of see my face thin out as the season goes along because I was so close to having given birth when I started, and then, you know, progressively over several months. But it was a perfect schedule because it was, you know, I was in, I think I was in 5 episodes, but it was all spread out. So it wasn't at all full time. So I was still home with the baby a lot. And, honestly, a favorite memory is, I think it was in the first episode that I was in, Jason wasn't direct. He directed a lot of them, but he wasn't directing that one. So when he wasn't directing, he was pretty chill. I mean, he was chill even when he was directing, but when he wasn't directing, he was real chill and just kind of sat around and chatted, and we were waiting for the turnaround of a scene, and it was me and Jason and Laura Linney and Mike Mosley, who played my husband, just sitting in this little living room that was my house. And I felt like we talked for like an hour, and they were talking about their kids, and I was learning stuff from them about, you know, being a parent, and mine were so little at the time. It was, I think Laura's son is about a year older than my oldest, and so, it was just really sweet to sit there with people who you've long admired. I mean, Laura Linney is one of my favorite actors of all time, but to sit there,
that's crazy.
Yeah, and just really connect as humans, which is what you always hope that you'll have time to do when you're on set, but you don't necessarily have time. The other people may not want to, may mess with their process. So it was really lovely, and honestly, I had a good time on that set, and I pumped throughout that also, and I had the best PA, Stephanie, I think. She was just always like making sure I was like, if we do this one, and then we'll go back while on the turnaround to make sure you can take care of it, and just really sweet.
That's great. That is so sweet. Going forward, do you have any big actor, like a specific big actor dream for yourself or goal that you would love to have happen?
Oh. That's a good question. I might be at a stage of slightly reassessing that for myself, especially just after the past several years with the strike and things having been so slow for so long. Not that I don't have dreams and goals, but I'm trying to figure out, what I want this next part of my career to look like. Of course, I'm still auditioning for the series regular roles, and like that's always been a dream, is to just have some like a nice steady show for a few years, but that's not really something I can control, and it's not something I can even necessarily take any more steps toward at this point. I just have to keep reading for them when they come, so I don't like to put that as like the goal, because there's nothing else I can do to get to that. It's more lottery at this point.
Right.
Not that there wasn't hard work along the way to get to this lottery, but you know, I've had a really lovely time this past year writing and coaching. And so I am trying to incorporate like what is my life going to look like? How am I going to keep these different creative parts of me alive? So I don't know. I totally want to be working more regularly again. But I cannot control the industry. I cannot control how the industry sees me and writes for my type. So instead, I'm putting my creative juice into these other things for now, and I hope that that will keep it all alive, you know, for when the opportunities are more plentiful, that some bigger things will be happening again. But if they're not, I'm gonna stay alive in these other ways, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I grew up loving writing so much that aside mm-hmm. from acting, I always knew I wanted to act as well. But I would just write all day long and I like just write stories all the time.
Oh.
And I miss it. And I genuinely am not saying this to suck up. You're such a talented writer that it's almost been reigniting my passion for it. I miss
oh,
it.
Nice.
Because I read a lot of books and I listen to a lot of audiobooks, but the ones I've been listening to lately, they're not necessarily, they're maybe informational just because I'm learning. I like to learn about different countries, or I'll listen to like celeb memoirs for fun.
Oh, yes.
I live and die by those. Again, Jenna Fisher's book, I'm listening to it again for the millionth time because
Aww.
It brings me so much hope. But you really are such a phenomenal writer, and I envy the way that you look at the world. I know that sounds like such a weird thing to say, but I feel like you find beauty in the most mundane things.
Aww.
And the way you write about
Thank
it,
you.
I'm not trying to fangirl
no.
too much, like in a weird way, but I think I would want to know if somebody felt that way about something that
Aww.
I created. So I
Thank
like
you.
To share it when I notice it. Okay. I like
That's so
to
nice.
End
Thank
my
you.
Interviews with a little lightning round of questions, and then I let you go. It's only 5 questions.
Okay.
So is that okay? Okay. Question number 1, and some are industry related and some are just for fun.
Sweet. Do I just answer whatever first thing comes to my head?
Yeah, and it doesn't, the first, some of them are like easy, fast, and some of them are, you'll take more time answering, and that's fine too.
Cool.
The first one, what is one piece of advice you have for people who are considering leaving their reps?
Take other meetings first, and get another agent secure first.
Okay, I think it's so interesting that you say this, because I have so many people that disagree with that because they think it's disloyal to your agency, and some people will really hate that I say this. I think I look at people who work 9-to-5 jobs and I'm like, they'd be crazy to
Right.
quit their job and then go, and it only disadvantages the actor, in my opinion, to be told that you have to. I don't think it's really fair, so I kind of love that you said that. But
yeah, I've heard other people say that too, and I don't And maybe there are agents who would think that, but I always took meetings first. And,
yeah,
and
you had
you
something
make,
lined up.
You have to make sure that it's right for you, that it will, that you think it will be better, because like you might have a meeting and be like, oh, no, actually I like what I got. You know, you never know.
Right. Okay. I love that. Number 2. What is your go-to coffee order?
Black coffee.
Ugh. You're a cool girl. I wish I was
Give
a
black
coffee
Give me a medium
coffee
black
drinker.
Coffee. I weaned myself off of the creamers and stuff, but.
Okay. Okay. I'm not cool. I wish I just went to the lake. I'm really late to the game on the coffee stuff. So my normal order is an iced mocha latte.
Okay.
And I just. Mother-in-law made the best cappuccino, and now Ooh. I'm like, am I cappuccino girly? I guess I can call
no,
myself
if I'm
one.
Not, if I'm going to be fancy, I'll get a cappuccino.
Okay,
absolutely.
Okay. What is your favorite place to eat in Atlanta?
Okay, just go to casual. I live in East Atlanta, so I love – we have so many good restaurants here. I love Holy Taco. Now Banshee's here, which is so nice and so delicious. I also went to Kimball House for the first time the other night, and it was quite lovely.
I've heard of that one.
It's fancy, but it's worth it. But I might just, I would probably say Holy Taco or Sun in My Belly.
Oh, I've been to Sun in My Belly. It's really good. And I just went to this other, I went to this Mexican place that's all outdoor and it's really cool. And I think it's like, I don't know if it's Grant Park area. And it's like tin looking on the outside, but it's not.
Yes. Edgewood, maybe?
Maybe Edgewood.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll remember later. Okay. The next question, favorite age to parent so far?
I like each stage. I love babies. I had a harder time when they were toddlers. They were so cute. I could just eat them. Honestly, now is great. They're both readers now. And I love it. Like, having little big kids is so fun. We can, like, go to water parks now and all have a blast. We do a lot of camping and hiking, and that's fun now. I mean, it's always been fun since we've been doing it for the past few years. But we have reading dinners sometimes. We try to eat dinner together, and that last night, my kid asked for a reading dinner again, because we don't do it every night. You know, we try to make conversation, even though I'm not going to pretend like that's easy. But a reading dinner is where we never bring phones to the table. They don't have phones, but we never bring our phones to the table. But we're all allowed to bring our books to the table, and we can just eat and read our books, and it's so nice.
That is the most precious thing ever. Now I want to implement that.
Reading dinner older. Is great.
That's so sweet. I thought the question, I'm like, some people are going to be like, Sarah, that's a harsh question. What favorite age? But my sister-in-law will be like, don't love a year and a half. She's like, not my favorite.
It's tough.
Yeah.
But they are not, cute. Yeah. I do love that, like, when they're still real smushy. Oh, I love that.
She just turned 6 months this week, and we officially today heard from the pediatrician that we get to start solids, and I'm like, I'm so excited.
Oh, that's fun.
I can't wait. I'm really pumped about it. What is – okay, this one, you can choose which one, or you can do both. Best advice anyone has ever given to you for the industry, or – best advice anyone has ever given to you for parenting?
The advice I always think of with the industry, somebody told me, I think it was the first, in my first professional production, he said, you should always ask for more money. And that was in a theater where I was like an intern and making, you know, $75 a week. And I always do, pretty much always.
Even, I love that.
I mean, you know, my first few TV jobs, I didn't. Actually, Chase got me above scale on my second TV job. I will say that. But it's just it's always a good practice to. I mean, you know, talking theater, I would ask for like $25 more a week, or you know. Because you can always ask. And then you can decide if you're, you know, if you're willing to do it, if they won't. But I think it's good practice for all of us to do, just so everybody gets used to us asking for more.
Yep, I love it. I love that. I'm so bad at it. I feel like I would be terrible at that though.
It's not easy. But it's easier now that we have email. Now that we live in the email age.
That's fair. I think my fear would be that I would get dropped, which is from the project, which likely wouldn't happen. They would just say no, and then you're like, okay, I'll keep it.
If it's just for a little more, yeah. I mean, and, you know, more often than not, it is a no. But it's a, you know, I'm sorry we can't do that. I wish we could. Mm-hmm. Usually the good ones are like that, you know. Right. And then you get to decide. yep, I still want to do it anyway, or not.
Okay,
and the
I
best
love that.
Parenting advice is, like, just to not be afraid to make mistakes and apologize. I apologize to my kids a lot.
That's so healthy. I love you for that. I feel like we all needed that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, probably our parents' generation was not taught that. You know, they felt like they had to be the authority and do it right. And, but I do remember a couple times my parents apologizing to me, and it was like, really affected me. Now, my kids, on the other hand, are going to be like, oh, yeah, mom was sorry all the time. But
I love that, though. It also,
when you realize you didn't get it right, show them that it's okay to not get it right all the time.
Yeah, and it also teaches them how to apologize to their mm-hmm. friends and other people.
Yeah.
Ugh. I love that. I bet you're the best mom.
I'm not. So
sweet. You are. You are. We already know it.
We're doing our best. We're all
yeah,
doing our
that's
best.
So sweet. Oh, thank you so much for talking to me today.
You're so welcome.
I loved it. I know it was a bit of a chaotic start. Again, I apologize.
Oh, no. It's I'm a technical dunce, so I should have started earlier because I should have known it would take me a minute.
I'm so bad at technology, so I was like praying ahead of time. I'm like, okay. Where can people find you?
I am on Instagram, Bethany Ann Lind, Ann with an E. You can subscribe to my newsletter, Bethany Ann Lind, is it .substack.com? If you search for Bethany Ann Lind on Substack, I'm sure you can find it. And also through my links on Instagram. And I don't get on the Twitter much anymore, unfortunately, or Threads. I keep trying to get on there, but I'm Lind Bethany Ann on X and Bethany Ann Lind on Threads as well. Maybe I'll start it back up one of these days.
I'm not on it either, so I kind of forget that it's not. I forget that it's not called Twitter anymore. It's X.
I know.
No,
I used to love it. It was my favorite. You could stir stuff up over there, but like I obviously loved to do. But
no, I love you. We love you for it. I love that, and I will. I'll be linking all the things you want me to promote in the show notes of the episode, so I can also put a link to the Substack. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you.
I really
it's so
appreciate
nice
it.
To meet you and connect. Have a good
Bye.
Night. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of the Stay at Home Actor Podcast. I hope you loved it. Bethany is a national treasure. I am so thankful she took the time to chat. As always, you can follow along on Instagram at the Stay at Home Actor Pod or email me at stayathomeactorpod@gmail.com. If you loved it, feel free to share it with a friend or share it on social media and tag me. I love to see who's listening. And thanks for listening, and I will see you again in 2 weeks.